Hello, welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable,
a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations with the public and on the level. To interact with us, you can send questions or comments along the video stream that you're watching tonight. So, hello and good evening. You to me, my name is John Ruark, past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957, in Fairfax, Virginia, and we have the full house tonight. So, without further ado, Robert Johnson, how are you tonight? Hold on, wait for it. Go.
I'm doing well. Good to see you, all of you together tonight. It's nice to be with you, as always. Waukegan Lodge 78 is my lodge that I was a part of way back in the day, and now I'm a secretary of Space Novum 1183 in Libertyville, Illinois. Thanks.
Excellent. Next up, Jason Richards. Hello and good evening.
Hello and good evening. Jason Richards here, past master of Vacation Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
Excellent. Next up, Mike the Intern. Hello.
Hey, Mike the Intern, Hammy, here from Lakeshore Lodge number 307, where I am the senior warden and lodge education officer. I'm also the senior steward for Castle Island Virtual Lodge. Good evening, everyone.
Awesome. And finally, Juan Sepulveda. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to see all my brothers here. Thank you for joining us in the Masonic Roundtable. Juan Sepulveda here from Orange Blossom Lodge number 80, where I have been nothing since the beginning of the pandemic. Thank you for joining us. Back to you.
That's good. All right. So let's see, before we get into tonight's show, as we always do, I want to give a special thanks to all the patrons who've been supporting the show. Head on over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable if you want to contribute a little bit to keep the show going for many, many years to come. And like I said, last week we have a couple 2021 upgrades in work as well. So thank you in advance for all that you do to support Masonic education. So let's see, this week was a topic that I know we've kind of thought about a little bit for a while now. And we wanted to take apart something different, something, you know, we've done a little bit of history with the history of the U.S. presidents. Mike did a great job, and that's gotten legs and got him around the Masonic interwebs. So congrats to you, Mike, for that, that research that you did. And so with the many facets of Freemasonry, history, ritual, symbolism, we thought we'd actually dig a little bit into ritual, but we're going to take a different spin on it tonight, where we're going to really ask the big question is, who needs ritual anyway? And what goes with that? So what we'll do is we'll start off kind of talking about what is Masonic ritual, because everything is jurisdictional, right? Everything is a little bit different as you go across the jurisdictions. And so, generally speaking, what separates our fraternity from other service groups or, fraternal organizations is our specific ritual. The things that make us unique are the morals and lessons that are taught in our degrees. And so, Jason, what do you think, why do you think ritual, what is Masonic ritual, and then why is it important?
So Masonic ritual is first and foremost a repeatable ceremony. It is a standardized, it's a standardized ceremony that maintains continuity across the Masonic fraternity and is designed to teach the new member something, in some ways that is unspeakable, ineffable. How do you convey deeply spiritual, deeply metaphysical, and deeply esoteric truths. And the way that that has been done for generations and millennia is through a standardized ceremony or a ritual. So Masonic ritual is simply the ceremony of the degrees. And why is it important? It's important because it is the vessel that is used to teach the initiate the ineffable truths and the spiritual truths of the Masonic fraternity, and also that's all I got to say about that. I had something else, but it's gone. I'll find it later.
That was a fantastic description. Actually, I was going to say that really codifies the entirety or gestalt of Masonic ritual. What it is, what it's made up of, and why it's important.
It's a vessel to convey the true secret of Freemasonry, which is the initiatic experience. Mm-hmm. That's what I meant to say.
I'm glad you came back with that, because that's quotable right there. So,
I get to it eventually.
So Hammy,
and I'm just going to keep interrupting.
What would you say is Jason's greatest flaw? No, what would you say?
Everything.
what would you say? Why would you say it's important that Grand Lodges have these committees that focus on the ritual? You know, these instructors of work, these standing officers whose sole purpose is to dedicate to the perfection of the Masonic ritual?
Well, for starters, it's because we have a progressive moral science, as it were. Now, the progressive part is obviously that you progress through the degrees, but it's also the idea that we progress through time. And what worked word-wise 300 years ago may or may not exactly work to convey the same idea today. Because, you know, words change, their usages, not their meanings particularly, but the context even then becomes different over time. And so you need to a certain extent, upgrade it, as it were.
So do you agree with that one?
Finish your thought? Or make it what?
I was going to say, make it more in line with what other jurisdictions are doing also.
Consistent. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I understand that point of view, but there's something I really enjoy about that tradition, even though the language is a little bit difficult and cumbersome, especially for people who may not be familiar with the olden English and things like that. But I think it's a connection. I think the layman terms and layman explanation have a better home in the mentorship context and perhaps the instruction context. And maybe it's the romantic in me. I want to see the parchment paper with the quill dipped in ink, writing cursive. I want that preserved, especially when it comes to important things like this. So when it comes to ritual itself, I do prefer that baggage that we come with. Even though I understand that for a lot of brothers, it's a very treacherous path to go through, but nothing worthwhile is easy at first, I think.
Yeah, and if you're not a Freemason, in most jurisdictions, the ritual that we have, pieces of this do go back to, you know, 300 plus years or even greater. So when you first experience that and you're not prepared for that, you know, you think you're joining a modern society of like-minded individuals who just, you know, enjoy each other's company, enjoy giving to charity. And yet, when you hear the ritual for the first time, it can really set you back because it's very anachronistic. It is very much out of time for the way we speak today. And so that's what part of this, you know, this recent discussion right here has been about is there a time to shift it? Is there a time to adjust it? Robert, when or when not do you think it's appropriate to adjust the ritual, even if it's over the past 300 years? Because we don't have the same ritual today as we did 300 years ago, but for the most part, as I will kind of add an insert into this setup for you. One thing I liked about when I was reading Chris Hodapp's Solomon's Builders, his book in preparation for the Lost Symbol book from Dan Brown, the very opening chapter had some ritual that may or may not have been close to what George Washington actually heard and went through. And he says, either way, if it's not the exact ritual, the point is that a Freemason today would be comfortable sitting in a lodge and hearing most, you know, 80-90% of the same words being used as were, you know, 300 years ago. So when is it appropriate to shift this ritual for a variety of contexts?
That's a really amazing question because it's so nuanced in the approach that I'm going to take here. And that is that it's always appropriate. And I'll just say full stop. It's always appropriate. And the reason why I feel that way is because if we are considering this idea of conveying the same thing, right, across cultures, people deal with ideologies and archetypes and stories and scenarios completely different. And while something might resonate in one story with one cultural group, it is not going to resonate the same way in another cultural group. So we're left looking at the prima materia, if you will, of the degree. Arguably, the northern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite has attempted to do this for the last lots of years. I don't know the exact date that they started modernizing things, right? But it's always been a consistent argument, either for or against or completely indifferent, right? Like, I used to be very against the idea of altering the degrees. Now, my opinion is that I don't so much mind the altering of the degree if the meaning is there.
Right.
And something that is interesting that the Northern jurisdiction has done actually is they've preserved the meaning arguably in a 21st century applicable way. So like Juan does presentations on practical masonry. And in a way, the Northern jurisdiction takes those lessons and then turns them into how we would use them today and then conveys a degree around that. So now you don't have to go from translation to translation when we're looking at historical context and understanding. You know, you don't have to take a history course to understand what you're going to get. But something going back to what Juan said, you know, he prefers this idea of the quills and the pen and all this. And that really gets my mind going when I think about ritual. Because when I think about ritual, like, take Freemasonry out of it for a second and just think morning coffee. Like, I'm sure y'all make your coffee the same way every day. And that's your ritual, right? But some of y'all drop K-cups in. You change it up, okay? Jason changes it up a little bit. I'm the same way every day, right? It's a precisely measure. I'm a Nespresso guy, so I do an espresso and a tablespoon of sugar, and that's it. No creamer. I got other people. My buddy, you know, we got a little coffee group. Alex likes creamer in his coffee. Jason tries different flavors, but like this idea is that you're still getting the coffee, but you're going about it different ways. So that foundation is still there. And then something that I think maybe John, you could, I want to ask you a question, John. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I'm going to ask it anyway, even if you said no. So when I think about ritual, it's supposed to be this ceremony, this consistent actions performed in a prescribed order. And that sounds to me very lean. And so when I think about like lean methodology, like I almost wonder, is ritual the perfect prescription? Has it been, has like discipline, going back to like to making coffee, or maybe you're taking a quill and a pen and you're making the perfect strokes, right? It's like an art form. The discipline is there. And then through that discipline, has it ensured the best possible outcome? And then those steps that led to the best possible outcome are recorded. And what is then is born is ritual? Or maybe we just don't put that much into it. But
I'm curious
on your take.
Or is it an iterative approach?
Long-term iterative. Yes. Yeah, I see what you're saying. No, I like the way you think, because that it's certainly when you're codifying a process, let's even call it a ritual, let's just call it a process. We have a process in which we do things writ large. Every jurisdiction does differently. And the words we use and the order we use them to get an output, a result, which is a master mason made at the end of this process, should be, for the most part, repeatable. And that way you're ensuring quality on the back end. So I'm getting really nerdy right here, right? So one way to think about it is, think McDonald's, right? So McDonald's has their process down so much that they can hire someone and do some on-the-job training that within, you know, a couple hours of training, they can make the perfect McDonald's cheeseburger. They don't need to be an expert cook. They don't need to be a chef. They don't need to know about textures of the condiments. They just need to know that, you know, one pickle goes on, two squirts of ketchup, two squirts of mustard, like, and just follow the process. If you follow the process, you will get the output of the same tasting hamburger here as in Washington State, as in Japan. So, so I would agree that the commitment to the ritual, as it has evolved in our fraternity, and like I was mentioning with Hammy, is when you have these whole committees that focus on keeping the ritual as inviolable as possible until they're ready to change it, is an important undertaking. Now, here's why it's important, in my opinion, is that because if we all agree with Jason's definition of that it is the ritual is the container, it's the mechanism, it's the vehicle for containing the moral instruction, everything that's in our society, then you want that container to be almost hermetic. It almost, completely self-contained. You don't want it to change without deliberate change. So what that means is that you will probably, and I'd argue the case can be sometimes more often than not, have people in charge of keeping the perfectly made hamburger without knowing anything about how to cook. So my metaphor is there to say that we need ritualists who know the words in the correct syntax better than anyone else, even if they don't know what those words mean. And so it could step on some toes, but I think it's important. Robert?
Yeah, so I was just thinking, like, my first question was, how is a burger different from a man? I'm thinking, this is all well and good.
They need the buns.
The buns, it's the buns that's different, yeah. But now my idea is, I'm thinking, what is the... So now here we have like this idea of like we take good men and make them better. And maybe the good men, whatever that objective term means, is like our best blank slate. that maybe works best for Freemasonry or something? Like, for best results, apply teachings to these type of men three times, you know, once a month, in a 2-hour meeting, and mm-hmm. and you know, pepper frequently with minutes. It is just an interesting way to look at it, for sure.
I'm more of a pepper with minutes to taste. Yes. it's an important ingredient, but you know, I like the where you're taking this. You know, I think this is a very, I don't think this is a conversation that we can approach as a, I know exactly what this is, and this is how you should think about it too. You know, this is one of those, I love encountering these moments where you can come in and, okay, let's hear this new perspective and let's hear the different perspective. I like your John's comparison to the quick service system where you don't need people who are very well informed on the culinary arts. You have someone who can follow instructions and just get the thing done like the people who are in charge decided. I personally understand that, and I can see the effect it can have. However, you can see the different strata. You have some people perhaps that work in, and I don't know how far we can stretch this analogy, but you have some people that begin working at McDonald's, and perhaps that method of just preparing food with a very rigorous prescribed process, maybe they're not content with just that, and they become more interested in, okay, why do we do it like this? And then they start asking questions, how come this is the order in which we offer the upgrades? This is how we supersize it. And they become more interested, and now we've basically qualified them to be a supervisor or a manager or a district person. But you have people that are purists in their approach. And if they knew that what's happening is a quick service thing, they wouldn't be caught dead in the premises.
So you're talking about traditional observance burger joints?
Or? Something like that.
Talking the Five Guys version of Freemasonry. Yeah.
So for the practical side of me says, yes, follow the damn instructions because we know what's good for you. But then there's the rebel in me that understands the empire will not succeed. There is something more important that we have to protect here. I'm a romantic at heart when it comes to this kind of thing. You will lose some of it. Even if you follow the ritual, it's almost a matter of time before you have someone, you know, pumping two squirts of the ketchup and or maybe not pumping it enough or not stacking the things correctly. And the system could devolve. I don't know. It's like almost like I hate to concede that, yeah, if you just follow the quick service method, it'll be fine forever. You know, there's a part of me that doesn't want to accept it.
What I also think you're alluding to, and correct me if I'm wrong, is, you know, we're big fans of education on top of ritual as well, right? So if you are, I'm just going to poorly just hack this metaphor apart. If you replaced the bun with a nice brioche, right, that's been handcrafted, the steps could still be put together in the same order. You could still have that same high school burger assembler put together a beautiful burger made of the finest ingredients because the process is still the same, but the quality of the ingredients is what changed. And so that's
the dues go up.
Yeah, the dues go way up. That's a really tasty burger at the end.
Well, with something came to mind that I think I want to share. I had the fortune of when I moved to this country, I I worked for Disney, and I worked for Disney on and off over the years. And one thing that sets Disney apart from other places, just to be diplomatic, is one of the things that they do. For example, they have an education system that they call traditions. And every single cast member of Disney has to go through traditions. And if you've ever gone to Disneyland or Walt Disney World or any of the Disney properties around the world, you will notice almost a childlike passion that you see the cast members having. I've heard this expression before. It's like, there's no way these people are this nice in real life. There's no way that these people behave like this all the time. And I've seen many of them do. You know, those who really get engaged and really accept the tradition, and they're able to really embody that spirit of innovation and that spirit of customer service, that spirit of magic, right? They make a difference. You can go to another theme park, right, that doesn't have the rich culture and the rich connection that the cast members at Disney have with the traditions and all the you know, what came before them. And you still get in a queue, get on a ride that sometimes it's more exciting, more energetic or everything. But the feeling you get in a Disney park never compares to the feeling you get at one of these parks. Now, if we take that and look at it in a Masonic context, I suspect that you would feel the same kind of thing. If you have someone just following, this is what we do and that's it, but they're not really getting that connection with that spiritual realm that we basically seek through the ritual. In a sense, that's part of what we're doing. We're trying to extract that essence and make it part of us by being a participant of the rituals. What do you think?
Yeah, and I don't want people to get lost on the metaphor of it being a McDonald's burger. Right? You can replace anything that has, you want consistent output on the end. So make it a Tesla Model Y for all I care, right? That all the parts have to fit together in a certain order to get the same quality. And they do specs at the end. They want to make sure whether it's your committee on work, your committee on ritual, or is it the people who are checking the panel gaps on the car to make sure that it's within spec. That's what we're talking about. So I think
the problem is Tesla's build quality is getting better.
Yes. Unlike Freemasonry ritual.
So how do you make Freemasonry ritual better?
Elon Musk.
So
make it theatrical.
A custom Android OS that delivers the ritual for you.
Hey, they'll never be wrong. I love it.
Segways with virtual faces on iPads. Woo!
That's assuming that what you're talking about when you talk about ritual in this is just the words. Because remember, there's a lot more to that ritual than words. And that's where, even when I'm talking, when I said just a moment ago where I said make it more theatrical. By the way, that doesn't mean dramatic. We're not talking about the guy walking through and all of a sudden all the explosions go off and everything behind him. Special
Michael
effects.
Bay presents.
No. Yeah, that's right. We're not talking about that. And by the way, a lot of what I'm going to talk about in the next moment here actually comes from a buddy of mine, Chad Kapinski. So I'm putting that out there because I know he's working on something more in depth on this on his own. But point is, the idea really comes down to our ritual in its own way is a stage play. And in this theatricality is the, you know, the motions around the lodge, where you start, where you stop, what you do at each place, and how you do it is important. And now I liked what Jason said, because he's right about some part of this, that it's for the candidate, the initiate. And he is. But the other side to it is when you start doing ritual in the lodge, though, there's a lot that's done while the candidate isn't even in the room. So who's that for? You know, that's for everyone else. And so is a lot of the other stuff that the candidate can't see while he's even in the lodge, you know. And on top of that, when you really think about it, I mean, think back to your own time going through those degrees. How much of what was said at that moment? I mean, you know the words now because you've practiced them. But if you think to that moment when you got done, how much of that did you actually remember, you know, at the very end? You know, yeah, that's right. It went right over, you know. So the point I'm making there is, who's it for? Is it really for the candidate? I mean, there's a part of it, as you know, in the initiatic experience part. But beyond that, it's also for everyone else in that lodge, you know. And when, I mean, there's, I mean, so that's why you have to add that theatricality to it. You have to actually make it precision. You have to make it, you know, a certain way every time, because they have to see it, they have to hear it, and they have to know that the next step is, oh, this is going to be this, you know, because they're seeing it over and over again.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing,
and there can't be any surprises.
Make it meaningful is what I'm hearing you say, right?
Yeah, to that, let me just say, Mike, I think you hit something there that we've been kind of dancing around and we hadn't really talked about yet, which is what happens when the candidate's not in there. It's like the preparation for this serious thing that we're going to do, right? Getting yourself in the right mindset, being really present. And there's something really magical about that. It puts everybody, when done appropriately, and again, I don't have a recipe for what's appropriate. But what sets a weird kind of tone of appropriateness is even before a degree, we have a much larger meditative and prayer ceremony that happens before our lodge even opens. But just before even a stated meeting, when we were in person, there's a procession around an altar, a moments like a chain of union. We're waiting. We're in a prayer for a few minutes. Our marshal, Jim Fry, you know, he would lead us in this great kind of thought exploration. And it just puts us in a spot to be able to perform the ritual and somehow like make it feel inside good, or I don't even know. I don't have words for it. But thank you for bringing it up, Mike.
Sure. Yeah, because what I get what you're saying there, and what it really comes down to is you need to do it like it's a play. Yeah, people have to take every piece of it seriously. You know, I mean, because I've actually, you know, had brothers actually say, "Well, I got the gist of the meaning of the words, but they didn't get them right." And I'm not criticizing a guy for not getting it right. I want that to be clear, because some people are just never going to memorize it exact, you know, especially because from lodge to lodge, even with like in Ohio, where we have the printed ritual and we have the ciphered ritual, even with that, you're going to have lodges that will consistently say the wrong word. I'm not going to give an example, obviously, but
yeah, we're going to pull your charter. So if you could just let us know the lodge names and dates, that would be great.
That's right. Yeah, but no, it's not even about that. It's just the word, some word or other will be different. You know, it's not, when you put it all together, it's not making the statement. It just isn't the right word. It should be something different or pronounced differently. I mean, it's as bad as the concept of, you know, is it brethren or brethren? You know, I'm not going to go into that because that's a whole different reason. But the point is, there's pronunciations. Yeah. Brethren too. Yeah. The pronunciations of the words, you know, and it's just, it's going to always be somewhat different. But the idea is if they're sincere about their approach, if they're sincere about making sure that every time they go up the one side of the lodge, that they stop at that one location where they're supposed to, you know, during the EA degree, if they stop right there perfectly every time, they're going to know that's the reason we're stopping right here is to do this next piece, you know. Now, granted, I mean, if they've stepped two steps further, does it really matter? No, but as long as you do it exactly the way you're supposed to every time, everyone's going to know that's where we stop. That's where we, you know, do this piece. And then that's where we move on. It'll never be that time when you're getting ready, and especially in Ohio, where you're getting ready for an inspection and you're going, where do we do that part? You know, everyone will know this is where we go and this is where we put a kneeler so that the guy can do this piece and so forth. You know, all of that stuff. And it's also because you're doing it, you're taking it seriously. Everyone in the lodge will take it seriously. And if you're doing it well, and I mean, and you're making it, the best word I can say is entertaining, because you're doing it right. You'll get all the old guys will all be actually watching instead of talking over there, which then causes a distraction, not just for the candidate, but for everyone else who's trying to pay attention and go, wait, what was that word? Because this guy's talking. You're not getting that, you know. So if there's actually some way to, you know, make it serious, you'll draw everyone into the moment. At least that's my take on it.
So one thing to add to that too, some other observations of the importance of ritual. One thing I noticed early on, of course, again, you have people who are really good at ritual and may or may not know exactly what it means. Or when you ask them, well, why did they choose that word? And you get this glazed look in their eye, like, what do you mean? It's that's the way it's in the ritual. And that's the end of that conversation. That gave me a little bit of, I'm not going to lie. Early in my Masonic career, I was kind of put off by the ritual because of, again, that hardcore focus on it. But without the education to plug into it, It was certainly just left hanging, left wanting for more. I also paralleled that with like the exoteric things that you see in religion, for example, right? If you have a lot of religious practices, pick your flavor, right? You have times in liturgy where you stand up, sit down, kneel, pray, sing, right? You listen to the sermon, have the back and forth between the pastor and the congregation. So these are all procedures, processes that get an intended outcome, which is a great sermon, you know, the instruction of the people, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, there's all sorts of additional religious things people do at home, the way they pray, right, the way they orient themselves. Some of those are heavily prescribed, depending on your religious flavor, right? You're very Orthodox, or if you're part of, you know, some of the more flexible modern religious movements. And so, struggling with my own faith, too, you think about, like, I'm just going to put a label on it, growing up with exoteric Christianity, and now becoming an esoteric Christian. They were two separate camps for many, many years, and, like, I didn't even know there was this esoteric side, because, well, it's what you do. You wake up Sunday, you go to church, you sing the song, you do this, and you hear some of the same traditional hymns. Oh, because John Wesley wrote it down, you know, many, many years ago.
You say, God, I screwed up, and he's like, okay.
High five. You're good. And
I guess I'll let you in. I killed my kid for it.
Right. So you don't... What's different is you can actually stay, and this is going to be a little bit controversial, too. You can have... stay away from Masonry for a second. You can have exoteric Christians or exoteric followers of your faith that can go through all the motions and still not get it. In fact, I'm going to argue you could even say someone could follow all the religious observances and not go to their afterlife, right? Because what? Whoa. So because... again, it's about following the process doesn't make it a great burger. Following the process perfectly does not make a good burger. So when you translate that to Freemasonry, ritual, as we dedicate our degrees to, our committees to, is just but one part of the exoteric side of Freemasonry, the part we see, the part that doesn't need a whole lot of interpretation. But then there's that whole back end side where you can, I'm going to, again, use a phrase that's loosely based off of a Mark Twain quote, which, you know, I'd say you become a Mason twice. Once when you're raised, and again when you find out why. Sometimes people never get to that second step. They can be a great brother. They are a Mason according to their Grand Lodge, right? They paid their dues, but they may not ever get to that. What does it all mean? And so, in conclusion, let me just wrap it up to say that you do need to do the exoteric stuff first. You do need to have the exoteric process done first so that you can get into the esoteric side as well. Thoughts?
I just keep going. When, as you started that, I went and I grabbed my copy of my heavily marked up copy here of the master's lectures. You know, you just write all over in the margins and highlight. And I went to this, the chapter on fraternity, because you started talking about this idea and some of the things that are explained in this book, or, I mean, it's really like op-ed, but no man ever grasped the full significance of the principles of Freemasonry simply by receiving the degrees. And then further, and finally, because many lodges are all too careless in conferring the degrees, are only some of the reasons why every lodge should be a school for instruction on the subject of Masonic spirit and methods. And there's just so much in this book that kind of touches on a lot of the different elements of ritual. As you specifically in what you were just talking about, this idea of experiencing something outwardly first and inwardly second, there's just a lot in this particular text that it reminded me of, like, hey, the importance is definitely in the ritual and give them the best experience, but also understand that it takes a length of time for that to soak in, right? You throw a sponge in a glass of water, it's not all gone at once, right? I mean, it takes a minute to happen.
So Juan, what are your thoughts on the kind of the exoteric ritual versus the esoteric ritual or inward path as well?
It almost makes me, it brings me to what I see in everyday life. You have people who are not interested and will never be interested in a deeper experience, period. Whether you put them in a relationship with another person, whether you put them in a spiritual sojourn, whether you put them on a enterprise ladder of leadership, they are never interested in a deeper experience. They just want to go through the motions, do what's expected of them, and then move on. So that is what I would see as the exoteric component. You have people that will go to lodge and they're perfectly fine seeing their brothers at the beginning, chit-chatting about the weather and the traffic, and then going into the meeting, going through the motions, and then going home and doing it all over again in a couple of weeks. But there are some that will have that spark of curiosity about the deeper levels, deeper layers of the esoteric. And they recognize that there is a value that is intrinsic in intermingling with those layers. So they will do whatever is necessary to get to it, whether it is trying to get their lodges to embrace that experience and maybe make some improvements to facilitate that connection, or they will seek it on their own. They'll join other bodies. They'll do their own introspection. They'll do their own investigation of the deeper meanings of Masonry. And hopefully, if they're lucky, they'll come across other brothers who have a similar thirst for that esoteric knowledge, and then they'll fulfill each other in that dialogue. I have the good fortune that I have a brother with whom I can have these experiences, with whom I can have these conversations, and with whom I can walk that journey of discovery for the esoteric. And I don't see him here tonight, but it's my good friend Marilo Sala. And we get criticized for it. You know, maybe we're not as involved in other aspects of Masonry, that maybe we're just not, that's not what we are in Masonry to do. You know, we have a desire for the esoteric, and we're going to find it whether people want to do it in their own or not. So
you're not pancake enough?
No, I'm really not. I'm not as popular in my lodge as I am here on the internet.
Someone has to say is more say than just dead. Esoteric.
Yeah, I swear on the life of my family that I've had brothers, I've had brothers write that verbatim in communications. Anyway, so the whole point is, for the brothers that are listening to this, who have a desire for a deeper experience, find it. It's there. You have access to the tools to unlock them. If you are not interested in it, that's perfectly fine. Whatever it is that brings you joy in Masonry, embrace it, but don't get in the way of those who have the thirst for having some deeper connection with something larger than themselves. And that's not too much to ask.
It's not a competition.
Yeah. Do you think? Get out of my way.
Fraternally, move.
Of course.
So, here we go. Now, it looks like it's time for the final question of the night. And so, as we go around, when I ask each of you this final question, which is, do you have a better, same, or worse appreciation for the Masonic ritual since your raising? Has your appreciation for Masonic ritual improved, decreased, or stayed about the same? And we'll go to Juan for the final question.
I think that the more time I spend in Masonry, and the more interactions I have with brothers, the more I give myself an opportunity to increase my appreciation. Yes, as I always describe it, there's an ebb and flow to the joy I feel, or to the enthusiasm I have for ritual and different things. But I think it's an increment thing. The more I get to learn, the more I discover, and the more I realize how little I knew at the beginning and how much more there is to know. So I recognize how ignorant I am, even though I am increasing in my knowledge. So for me in particular, I think that I am more appreciative of the value of ritual. Even though I've always had a very healthy expectation of perfection when it comes to ritual. I try to learn the words to the ritual correctly. I try to understand what they mean. I try to do floor work as best as I can. And in a sense, because I don't want my stumbling through those things to interrupt that spiritual connection that I may get from the ritual. Just like when you're a beginner at playing chess, you're asking yourself, can this piece move this way? Or can I move here? Can I take this piece? Do the queen, you know, how many moves can, what's the angle of attack for this piece or the other? But eventually, as you, the more you play, the more involved you get in it, that's not even part of your thought process. You're thinking further along. You're having a deeper connection with the board and the pieces and all that. So that's a similar thing we see in Masonry. I want to thank everybody for participating in this dialogue. I love having these conversations with brothers. I think it's the one way we can grow together, is to have these conversations, even though some of the aspects of them can be uncomfortable for some. Just having them is important. And before I leave tonight, I wanted to invite you all to check something that I am working on. My dear brother John Rourke and I have been working on a special project. We're going to be announcing more details later on, but if you go to thegentlemansbrotherhood.com, you can learn a little bit more about it. So go to courses.thegentsbro.com and you could be one of the first people to take part in something that can take you higher. We're sharing some of our best secrets of doing things and achieving things. We hope that you take part of it. Thank you, brothers.
I'm excited. All right, let's go over to Hammy. Final question. Has your appreciation for ritual improved, decreased, or stayed about the same?
You know, it's kind of funny. I would say that it went down right away because when I went in, I was under the expectation of it being better than it was. But, you know, I've seen... Since then, I've actually seen better ritual, but I actually have a very strong appreciation for the actual concept of ritual more than what I've actually seen. Does that make sense? Because, you know, I've seen good ritual, I've seen bad, I've seen extremely bad ritual in different jurisdictions, not just in Ohio. I've seen it all over the place where I've gone. And to be honest, I have an appreciation for what it should mean, what it should be. And again, because I have seen when it works well and you have a good team doing the work. So I can say that I've seen some very good stuff, and that's where I get my appreciation from.
Excellent. All right. Moving on, Jason Richards, what say you?
Do I have a better or worse or the same appreciation for the Master Mason's degree in Masonic
or
ritual?
Or D, none of the above.
So I was incredibly spoiled in college because I am a member of a fraternal order that has to this day the most beautiful ritual I have ever seen in my life, and that's the ritual for Phi Mu Alpha Sinfonia Men's Music Fraternity. It is like many Greek organizations, has its ritual origins in Freemasonry, but the way it's put together, the symbolism. It is just incredible, absolutely incredible. And so having gone from that now into the Masonic ritual, which is much older, but at the same time, a much simpler, it was not a step back by any stretch of the imagination, but you had to dig quite a bit deeper into the symbolism of the Masonic ritual to take away the allegorical significations and the deeper meaning and lessons to uncover the true beauty of the ritual. Whereas, you know, in my fraternal initiation ceremony in college, it was there was a lot more symbolism that was explicitly explained, and so there was a lot less introspection than an allegory. So, you know, I think since I've been raised, my appreciation for the ritual has increased. just because I have learned about the history of the ritual. I've seen the ritual grow over the past 300 years. I have, you know, read and heard the stories behind the creation of the modern third degree. Everybody says ritual shouldn't ever change. There are no innovations in masonry. I'm like, if there were no innovations in masonry, you would never have a master mason degree, because that didn't show up until the 1730s. So, or mid 1720s. Anyway, so I think my appreciation for the Masonic ritual has markedly increased, given that I've had time to study the allegory, study the rich symbolism and the origins of that symbolism that we, that Masons literally grabbed from everywhere they could. There's just so much packed in the Masonic ritual that if you take it at face value alone, you're just missing. And so, yeah, that is one of the beautiful things about the Masonic ritual, is that it's just so packed full of allegorical significance. And you could devote several lifetimes to studying it, and you'd still have insights that you could take away when you were done.
Awesome. Thanks. Robert, better, worse, or the same?
So you sound like my optometrist. One or two? Better one, or the same?
Better two. Better one?
Better one, better two. That's such a weird question. It's a good question. Not like you're not great at asking questions. My initial response, like instantly, was my appreciation has decreased. And then it's like, well, what's the context behind the answer? Well, I guess it just appears that it's decreased. It's probably stayed the same, actually. And the reason I say it appears as though it's decreased is because through Freemasonry, I have been exposed to so much more ritual that my objective lens is like wider now. I see more. So this really niche thing in my limited scope took up a lot of room, and it was really cool. But now when I see the wider scope of things available, it's still really cool, but there's a lot of other really cool stuff too. So in comparison, maybe it doesn't stand out as much. So I would say that it's leveled off. It's never increased or decreased in my appreciation. I appreciate it wholeheartedly. But there is, every once in a while, some kind of neat, shiny thing in Freemasonry that stands out, and I go, now that is something special. That is a recipe for, you know, just amazing things that can happen to an individual if taken seriously and acted upon, both in a metaphysical way and in a practical everyday life application kind of way. So yeah, I would say that it stayed the same throughout, with great respect, and an occasion, you know, like a sparkler, maybe it got a little bit too much magnesium at some part of it, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, it just shines bright for a second. That's the way I feel about it. If you all like Masonic podcasts, I know you do, you're listening to this one, check out WCY, the Winskimi podcast, Sunday nights, 9:30. This week I've got a guy you all know from Refracted Light, Brother Joe Martinez, is going to come on. And we had a listener and fan requested episode on fallen angels, aliens, disclosure, UFOs, and Freemasonry. How is that all even connected? You have to listen to the interview to figure it out. But it was a lot of fun, and we had a good talk. So I hope you guys enjoy that. The March issue of Fraternal Review, Southern California's research magazine, theresearchlodge.com. The March issue is all about the Masonic Legacy Society. It was the guest editor, so I got to curate all those articles. There's some great articles in there, including some by Baruti Kim at Sisuvong, Brother Chuck Dunning, and a few others. So I hope you guys check that out. And just as a plug for Masonic Legacy Society, 2026.com. We talked about ritual and deepening your understanding. That is that whole project's goal. So I hope you guys check that out. And also I'll be talking to Fraternal Review podcast. I think we're recording it tomorrow. And so there'll be some great questions that we're going to go over there. And I hope you guys check it out. So that's it. Thank you very much for joining us in this episode. It's always enlightening to talk to, you know, my brothers here on the Masonic Roundtable, but also to see everybody chit-chatting along the sidelines on the YouTube and Facebook. So just great points. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Had a good time peeking over there every once in a while. So good dialogue, good back and forth. That's the whole point. You know, thinking about that, the final question about better, worse, or about the same, I think it actually moved, the needle moved over time. And the first thing that came to mind is something that I've seen in my industry, the Gartner hype cycle. And so Gartner is an IT service management company, and they kind of do evaluations of software and all that around the world. And they're kind of looked as kind of sometimes independent researchers to determine how good new technology is, you know, AI, Internet of Things, that kind of stuff. But one thing that they have is this patented hype cycle, which looks something like this, where in the beginning you have low expectations, but over time you get this peak of inflated expectations, and then it crashes. It crashes hard into this trough of disillusionment. And eventually, you crawl out of this trough of disillusionment into the slope of enlightenment. And I'd probably say that my my appreciation for ritual kind of followed the same path here, where, you know, as a young entered apprentice, you know, didn't know what to expect. I went through these degrees. I was like, wow, that's a whole bunch of old words I don't know. I really need to learn that. Like, it's really important. So then as I started to dig into that, ask more why questions about what's the meaning of that, and not getting a lot of good answers, I did fall into this trough of this disillusionment. But through perseverance and internal study, I started to crawl out of that and actually get a better appreciation for the ritual. In the same way that I always wondered growing up in my faith, like, why do people memorize Bible verses? Like, why do you memorize it? It's always right there, right? But people memorize Bible verses in order to have them at the ready and to always try to apply them, right? It's not the act of memorizing something, like, you know, memorizing the digits to pi. It's so that you can use it. It's always at the ready. Same thing is true for Masonic ritual as well. When you want to really, if you were trying to contemplate a working tool in masonry and you don't know the words that go with that, you have to kind of stop what you're doing and maybe find your manual of work and flip through it and try to find that. So having that at the top of your brain really helps to solidify that and get you advancing to that next step. You know, and it's, you got to ask why. You got to ask why about the ritual, why we do certain things, and be annoying with it. I give you permission, because that's the only way you're going to grow, is you say, why do we do this? Why do we do that? One thing that Pennsylvania Academy of Masonic Knowledge shared recently on their Facebook page was about, why do we square corners? And so in most jurisdictions, you'll have deacons that'll walk around the lodge and they'll do 90 degree turns. And, you know, they usually try to do it tight, sometimes very military-like. And so the reason is, why do they do it that way? That's not written down anywhere. And then, of course, you could apply some Masonic interpretation on top of that. But the real reason, as we've been able to understand it, is the tracing boards were rolled up carpets. And so to keep the carpets on the floor preserved, they walked around the carpet and actually just walked around the 90 degree angle of the end of the carpet. So that's why it's important to always question, you know, to appreciate why we do certain things, and then still question what's the meaning behind it. And so that's been my experience with Masonic ritual, is appreciation has grown over time, not without its blips, but in order to really understand what it means to me and how I apply it in a philosophical concept. If you like philosophy, Robert and I did just come out with a new book, The Master's Word. You can find it on Amazon. It's on Kindle and paperback. Really enjoy putting that together, so go check that out. And it is a lot different. Right? You may know us from this business time. This is a deep comparative religion philosophy type book that we really enjoy putting together. And if you're nerdy about stuff like that, go check it out. I think you're gonna like it. That's what I've got. So I want to thank you all very much for watching. We'll see you next week and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.